Welcome to Am I the Bleep?
Welcome to Am I the Bleep, the podcast where your two favorite Jonathans, we hope your only Jonathans, decide whether or not people are assholes based on reading Am I the Asshole posts from your favorite social media platform, Reddit. It's crazy, it's fun, it's a rip-roaring good time. John, how you doing?
I thought Jonathan exclusivity contracts were illegal in Canada.
Is that so? Did it change?
Yeah, they changed the law because they knew that if you wanted to have more Jonathans down the line, there's no real reason your current Jonathan should stop you from enjoying further Jonathans.
Classic Trudeau.
I'm good. I'm feeling great. I'm ready to read, to coach, to learn, to laugh, to grow, probably, because that's usually what we do here, and to decide if people on this subreddit are assholes or not assholes.
Are they the bleep, right?
Yes. Yeah, we don't want to start swearing on this show.
Well, we already have. The past couple have actually, we've had to put the explicit tag.
Oh, can we just put them on all of them? Can I just go ahead and
you can swear.
Fart. Just...
Oh.
Piss,
Oh, fudge. Ooh. Oh, not bad.
No. Brick.
Ooh. Daring.
Didn't you tell me you had a new idea for?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm rolling into it. I just wanted you to get that out of your system first.
Oh, thank you. I feel bad.
Good, good. So today we're going to try something new. Normally on this show, as you can imagine, we read posts. As I just said, I just explained the concept before, but I'll explain it again. We read the posts from Am I the Asshole, and we decide whether or not they are the bleep or not the bleep. And, you know, we throw our ideas in it, some maybe coaching, maybe some, you know, mental health understanding, some relationship dynamics. But we're actually going to make a snap judgment after just reading the title of each post today. Then we're going to take turns reading, you know, the actual post itself and to see how close we were to actually being right. Now, my hunch is that as a Jonathan, we're always correct. It just, that's the way it is. And that's why I guess Trudeau wanted to open up calling people Jonathan again.
I've actually been deciding if these people are assholes or not before we even read the title. So this works out well.
You're just like, yeah, everyone's an asshole.
100%.
It's a Thursday. It just is what it is.
Yeah. The conceit of this show is a little bit broken because of that, I'll admit, but you know, whatever. It's fun to banter about it.
Are they the bleep? Yes. Yes. Period. Yeah, end of story. Enough. All right. Yeah. So, John, you want to go ahead and read the first title. We're going to each say yes or no that they're the asshole. Then you're going to go ahead and read the actual post. Then sure. We'll see where we end up, and we'll follow our usual format from there.
Then I'm going to make sure I read the username, and I hope you do too, because I feel like that'll give us just slightly more information, maybe a touch more information to go on when we read this title. Does that work for you?
We have a deal. If I make a mistake and forget, I know you'll call me an asshole and remind me to be better.
User initial effort 422 asks, am I the asshole for having my wedding the same day as my sister-in-law's due date?
Yes.
I'm going to say, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways. No,
but no. Say... Yes or no? Yes or no?
No, yes, fine, yes, yes.
You said no, yes, fine, yes, yes.
Yes, yes.
Okay, cool. Yes, 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 and yes again.
Yes, you are the asshole. Okay, let's find out. My fiance, who is a 32-year-old male, and I, a 26-year-old female, are getting married soon. Congratulations. We've had everything booked and ready to go for almost 2 years because we got engaged during COVID. Mm-hmm. Coincidentally, we found out his brother's wife / sister-in-law, who is 36, was pregnant 6 months ago, and the due date was the same weekend as our wedding. When they told us, we all had to be okay with them and my mother-in-law maybe not coming because there was nothing we could do to move our date either. The thing is, Sister-in-law miscarried 4 months ago, and it's been incredibly difficult for her. She's been trying for a while and finally got pregnant with this baby. While we were all devastated for her, the rest of the family has moved on, and the sister-in-law has been extremely spiteful about this. At first, she demanded my fiancé and I include her baby at my wedding. We were going to save seats for family members who have passed with their pictures during the ceremony, and sister-in-law wanted us to print our photos of her sonogram scans and do the same. I politely declined this idea because in all honesty, I think it's so morbid and just sad. When I said no to this, she said she won't be coming to the wedding anymore because this should not be a day of celebration, rather mourning for her unborn child. She is now planning a memorial and telling family and friends to attend that instead of my wedding on the same day in honor of her due date. It's become this huge issue in the family of people feeling guilt-tripped into sister-in-law's memorial, and she told me if I wanted my own day, I have 364 others to choose from. My fiancé had some not very nice words for her afterwards, and now she's acting like we are happy about her child, quote-unquote, child dying. Am I the asshole? Wow. Well, lesson learned there. All right, go ahead. Jonathan Flomathan Friedman, what do you think?
So part of the reason I wanted to use this exercise of saying yes immediately, whether like what's your gut reaction based on the title, is I feel like in our lives, if somebody says something, we immediately have a judgment call about them, even professionally, and we spend a lot of time learning how to not pass quick judgment and get the full story to understand. And this was an interesting first post because there's a lot of story here, right?
What's crazy is you didn't read this beforehand. You didn't know what the story was. So like,
I just click and then send them to you on Facebook Messenger, which is the only way 30-year-olds communicate.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. This is like really illustrative of the point, but it's also illustrative of how, you know, any story, even if you know, with no filtering, any story can have so much more behind it that if you decide right away that people are the assholes, you're kind of missing a lot of that decision-making process. And so you got to kind of slow your roll, withhold judgment, and try to understand what's going on.
Absolutely. So let's take a look at this. I think the concept that I'm thinking about as I'm deciding, you know, on my second pass, now that we know a bit more of the story, this concept of living in vacuums, right? Somebody wants to have a wedding, somebody miscarried, but here they're a part of the family structure. And, you know, there's, you know, grief happens and happy things happen. And that's just the way life is, unfortunately. And it's terribly awful to miscarry, and especially if they've been trying for a while and going through all of that. It's awful. And it sounds like the family has been actually, you know, very supportive about, you know, the sister-in-law and all of that. But here we have a conflict, which is that we now have the wedding and we have a memorial, and they're kind of butting heads because, you know, they both want it to be on the same date. So are they the asshole for having the wedding at the same day? You know, they've been waiting 2 years. They probably have deposits and timelines when things are booked. It could be they're losing money. We need to know, you know, the full scope. But I feel that while it's awful that the sister-in-law lost a child, I think, you know, OP, initial effort 422, is also entitled to having their wedding. Why not, right? I do think that they're a little bit the asshole for maybe, you know, the sonogram pictures is a lot, but I've been to many weddings where people have pictures of people they lost. You know, people, you know, share that they wish they could have had that family member there to celebrate with the whole family. There's a lot of ways to, you know, have that impact at the wedding. And I think not including that when it's clearly, you know, there is that grief happening in the family, I think isn't the nicest thing. But ultimately it is your wedding. So in this case, OP just has to decide, okay, am I okay with straining the relationship with my sister-in-law with my sibling, and potentially with the family members who are going to go to the memorial. If they're okay with that and they didn't want a relationship with them anyways, go ahead, have your wedding. If not, there may need to be some flexibility here. I think the main assholery going on, I think, is just around having a conversation about how they can include the sister-in-law and some of their needs on this day, because it's a loaded day for them, rightfully so. But I do think the sister-in-law, you know, you can't project what you're going through on to everything else. You can ask for support. You can ask for care. You can go and, you know, access grief counseling and therapy and these sorts of things to help move your way through. You know, also have a memorial. Maybe there's a way to have the wedding the night before and all the families in town, so you can have the memorial on the Sunday, as an example, or something like that. But yeah, yes, the asshole immediately from getting more of the story turns into, well, you know, like, there's a lot of moving pieces here. But John, what do you think?
You're not the asshole at all. And I think you're being very gentle and kind here, Jonathan. But what, and this I'm going to direct not to the people who are all reading this and saying, wow, that's absolutely buck wild that your sister-in-law decided to hold a competing memorial event when that was never like her original plan. Her original plan was to come to your wedding and ask for this thing that she felt would be appropriate. So this memorial, this picture of the sonogram to be at your wedding. So I want to talk to the people who have maybe lost a child in their life, maybe in the second trimester, maybe later, and they can't help but empathize and sympathize with this grieving sister-in-law. I think that you have to also take a step back and ask yourself, if you ask someone to do something at their wedding, and if they don't do it, your response is not only to not go, but to create a scorched earth policy where you will try to make the wedding worse in order to make them regret their decision. That is not a request, that is harassment. Your sister-in-law is harassing you into trying to get you to do something. Now, the people who feel for the sister-in-law, I feel for the sister-in-law. The sister-in-law is grieving, and grief makes you do buck wild things. But the looking at the situation for more than just the events in it, but also the context of like, wow, this person is like acting in an unwell manner, is something that should inform your decision making, and also should inform how you talk to other people about it. Your fiance having not very nice words for this grieving sister-in-law, I understand the anger. I think it makes sense that people are upset and tensions are high. This isn't the way. This isn't the way, because this person is not acting rationally. This person is acting like you are the vent for their anger and grief. And if you continue to be the vent for their anger and grief, you will become the asshole. You will turn this around and make this completely something that you could have avoided. I'm not saying that you need to do the sonogram at the wedding. I kind of agree it's morbid, but I would say that your job now is to find a way to empathize and to de-escalate, not necessarily because you're the asshole, but because there is a greater context here than just your sister-in-law is being a mean-spirited, evil person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you can read in is that second last paragraph of all the irrational things that she is saying and doing, that you can have a wedding on any day, that you can eat, like, implying that you can easily move a wedding that's been planned 2 years in advance, or that you're happy for her child dying. I think you have to kind of take those hints as not, wow, this person is so mean, this person is so so evil. It's more like, wow, this person is like having a breakdown. Like, this is a complete breakdown of rationality, from going to be rational and asking, coming to the wedding and asking for this thing that's kind of not morbid, to being completely irrational and trying to create a competing event. And I think also presenting that to the family members and being like, we need to do something for the sister-in-law. She's unwell. Like, we're not taking care of our family right now. We're enabling by letting this go on. I think that's a serious thing. And I'll relate it to that thing that I said, thing last week, where during weddings, people kind of expect the world to stop and people to stop being themselves. And this is a situation where you have to take into account, like, in this world, your sister-in-law is kind of sounds like she's falling apart. And that it's not necessarily your complete responsibility, but it contextualizes this problem.
And I think contextualizing problems when you're dealing with conflict, especially in family, especially, you know, a wedding and grieving from a miscarriage, these are two very significant life events. And, you know, let's say you went to the mall or something like that, and somebody just yells at you for, like, you know, you tried to hold the door open for somebody who is immediately behind, but your hand slipped and it falls, and then they swear at you or they're angry or something like that. You can assume that, take a guess and say, okay, that person is evil. You know, like, they're so entitled. Like, why should people open the door for them? It was a mistake. Or you could say, hey, you know, that person might be having a bad day, and, you know, maybe somebody needs to help that person. In this case, when we have somebody grieving, like, as to your point, people do buck wild things when they're grieving, and we don't even know the full extent. There could be a postpartum depression type of thing going on here. There could be, you know, the grief. There could be a PTSD piece. There can be a lot of other pieces, and we don't even know what's gone on in their life beforehand. Maybe there have been other contributing factors to why they're very demanding and have a lot of needs here. And I think you're exactly right that the family needs to band together and not put the wedding aside, but figure out a way where they can support the sister-in-law as well. And at home, if you're agreeing, disagreeing, you think that we're assholes, let us know in the comments. Whatever you need to do, whatever you need to do, you can do it. We're here.
Yeah. Give your hot take. Would you have this person come to your wedding regardless and try to, like, work, do everything, no, work your magic to build bridges and put out an olive branch, even though the chances are they come to your wedding and they kind of make it about their grief and not about celebrating you? Like, there's a lot of options here. So there's a lot of opinions. So share yours. But now I'm going to ask my good friend Jonathan to share this next post.
Okay, so I'm going to remember to read the name this time. This is posted by Sweet Cherry Pies, which might be one of my favorite type of pies, P.S. Sure. Am I the asshole for not telling my boyfriend I won money 15 years ago? What do you think?
No.
Just for the divisiveness and because I hate you, I'm going to say yes. Deep hatred.
Should we give why? Should we give a reason why we said no?
Just gut reaction. Am I the asshole for not telling my boyfriend I won money 15 years ago? You said no. And I'm like, absolutely.
Okay, fair enough. Go ahead.
There we go. I had to zoom in because I'm 30 and I need to do that now. Okay.
I'm starting to worry that you're treating 30 like the new 60. Are you okay?
It's the new 70, man.
Oh, God.
In my day. Okay. Am I the asshole for not telling my boyfriend I won money 15 years ago? I don't know what I did wrong or if what I did is wrong, and I need some advice. I didn't want to post this on my real account because I'd like to be as anonymous as possible. Side note, I feel like so many people have like 30 Reddit accounts, which seems toxic. My boyfriend, 35-year-old male, and I, 35-year-old female, were discussing finances as we wanted to be on the same page. My boyfriend moved in with me unexpectedly 3 months ago as his landlord decided to move into the property with his family. We were discussing finances, and the topic of how I own my place came up. I explained I want some money. Not a lot, but enough to put myself through nursing school, purchase my home, and have some savings back in 2009. And I bought my place outright and then rented it out until I moved back into it late 2018. Obviously, I had some luck on my side, as this was right in the middle of the recession, so I got my place for real cheap. He says I deceived him by giving him the impression that I was financially well off and that I led him to believe I was more business savvy than I was. I don't know how I did that because I literally work as a nurse and make decent money, fully own my home, fully own my car, have decent retirement plans and decent savings. I'm fairly certain that I'm financially better off than most people I know. He says that he can't trust me anymore and that he was stupid to have listened to my financial advice. But the thing is, I never gave him any financial advice except for telling him not to buy a car that was, in my opinion, unreliable and much too expensive. Did I deceive him by not telling him how I got myself to be financially stable? FYI, we have been dating for almost a year and a half. And the more important question is, are they the asshole? Enough with this, like, switching the question, did I deceive him? No. Are they the asshole? Are you the asshole? Come on, stick to the script here, people.
Stick to the script. Stick with your convictions. No, I stand by my original take. You are not the asshole. Wowie. Okay, so what's the implication here? The implication here is that when you start dating someone within a year and a half, you need to tell them if the money that you have, that you've come by, is due to luck, due to business savvy, or due to a combination of the two. I don't think that's true. Like, why? Why would you need to do that? Unless, like, what's the purpose? Why does your partner need to think you're, like, okay, I think we can all agree that your partner needs to know and feel confident that you're not god-awful with money. Like, that is worth knowing, because if you're god-awful with money, then obviously, like, there's going to be, at the very least, like, a little bit of your partner helping you and trying to, like, guide you and, you know, give you some sort of benefits from being in this relationship, in this partnership. But to know whether you came into your money by luck or by your own savvy or by combination, I mean, I guess it's just kind of nice to know. But the only reason I can think of is because your partner was expecting you to be a sole earner in the relationship and to not have to worry about money for the rest of, in this case, his life. Because, you know, I guess the implication would be is that, oh, I thought you were going to be able to take care of us forever. But if it was just luck that you were able to kind of become financially stable at 35, then who knows what my future holds, which is shitty, I think. It's not cool behavior. It's sort of like expecting your partner to solve all of your financial woes for the rest of your life. That's, I believe that's referred to as gold digging.
That is the technical term.
Yeah, I don't know. That's pretty, I don't think you're an asshole at all. I mean, did you withhold it for a specific reason? I know they can't
good question. That's a good question.
If you withheld it for a specific reason that's like not, that's dishonest, I don't know. But it didn't sound like you did, so I don't think you're an asshole. I mean, I can't even think why you would withhold that for any reason other than you have a lot of money left from the winnings and you don't want your partner to treat you differently, but it doesn't even sound like that's the case. You don't have most of the money you spent in order to become not having to rent anything anymore. So, yeah. I guess you're a little bit of an asshole because all landlords are evil, but, you know, other than socialist ideology, I don't know. I don't think you're the asshole. I think maybe he's acting like an asshole.
Interesting. So I think that in our life, every single day, we're presented with small wins, small opportunities, some losses, whatever the case might be. And it takes somebody with a level of savvy to be able to leverage those opportunities into making good decisions. Another person who wins money might go and blow it all on partying or something like that. And it's not that it's bad to, you know, have some fun if you have some money, but this individual, Sweet Cherry Pies, decided to, you know, look at what the market was yielding and say, okay, wow, I can actually buy a home and I can rent it out and I can put myself through nursing school and have a job that makes sense. I know this wasn't around back then, but whatever the 2009 equivalent of crypto was, they didn't go and do that. They didn't do any, you know, rash transactions. It sounds like this is an individual who, you know, did a lot of research and made a really astute financial decision. And that takes savvy. It's like a lot of things in business require luck, but it's how you leverage those opportunities to put yourself in a better position. Mm-hmm. I know money, and depending where you are in the world, the conversation is a lot more complex than that. And I'm not a financial advisor, and I'm not trying specifically to go there. But saying that somebody doesn't have savvy, they clearly have savvy. I think that's just important. And if you come into some money and you're able to make a good choice, go for it, right?
Sure.
I think the other piece that is coming off for me is, everybody, especially if you're dating in your 30s, your late 20s, it's likely you have dating history or some other history before you met that person, right? It's not like everybody exists in the ether for 34 years and then you turn 35 and now like you're starting fresh and all your history is together. Lots happens in 34 years before you meet your partner, right? In this case. And I think that it makes sense that not all stories end up being told right away. And that's part of the thing. Like, you know, I've been with my partner 5.5 years. Like every day we learn something new about each other. That's something cool. And I hope that continues for a long, long time. After 1.5 years, it makes sense. Like, do you go on a first date and like outline your entire life story? No, you outline some things and you connect and you go through it and have conversations.
I mean, I do that, but that's sickness. That's ill advised.
You opened up in your psychotherapy school and a page was just like John Rom.
No, the other way. I had to become a psychotherapist because I'm like, I had to learn how to make it not about me.
So here, I think that this is not asshole behavior at all. I agree with you. I'm curious to know if there was a reason why they were withholding the information. But, you know, it could be they got a sense that there were some gold digger vibes or something like that and didn't want to go into their entire life savings. It could be they grew up in a culture where, you know, talking about money is not something that they do. It's like a faux pas. So that's another thing to consider. But I think, you know, baseline story, not at all. And I'm curious. I know this is about OP and not the boyfriend, but I'm wondering, like, that's a very heavy reaction to call your partner deceptive. That those are fighting words. I'm wondering why it is that happened. I'm wondering if, you know, they went through some unlucky things and then, you know, used this as an opportunity to lash out. Ultimately, I think in any relationship, especially if you're moving in with each other and one person has some luck, you're able to share that. And in this case, this is what OP did. You know, they brought them in when the boyfriend lost their place and stuff like that. They're very, I don't know, definitely not the asshole, in my opinion.
This kind of relates to a strong opinion that I have where you should spend as much time in the early relationship getting to know someone. Not just the stuff that they present to you, but the stuff that like is probably things they're not super proud of, things that they're not super, they wouldn't advertise about themselves. Because I feel like trying to find out the way people are about money is a really important thing to learn early on. 1.5 years is a pretty long time to discover that your boyfriend is not cool about money. Like, has no chill whatsoever when it comes to being, to his partner having some sort of a windfall of money. So I would say that the fact that you're a year and a half in and you're discovering this, I think this is a lesson learned for next relationship. If you are going to break up with this person, or if this person somehow manages to turn this around, I think you need to kind of create a very large boundary over what is acceptable reactions to each other's success. Because if you include jealousy in them in that mix, yeah, it's going to be a very long, long relationship, and not in the good way. It's going to be long and arduous and annoying, and then not fun.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is a good lesson to share, which is be curious. Like, I watch a lot of these matchmaking shows, and I find it's another example of people just not asking each other questions. Yes. Like, they ask each other the surface level things, and then later on they're like, oh, they didn't want kids, or they want life to look this way, and I want to live in this city. Asking these questions is fun and part of the connecting experience. If I was dating someone who said, oh, I have a house, I'd be like, that is sick. Like, how did you do it? Like, I won the lottery. You won the lottery? Like, that's so cool, right? It's an opportunity to connect. And I feel like a lot of people, to your point, aren't really asking so many of the questions early on. And really what we're looking for when you're asking these questions is, you know, what's interesting to you? Where do you connect? And where do your values fit in with each other? And money, there are a lot of, you know, ways we're brought up around it. There are a lot of different I know things that we learn over our years, a bunch of lived experience for positive or for negative around money. And it's really important to, you know, dive in, even if it feels a little uncomfortable. It's, you got to have, especially in your 30s. Come on.
Great.
But start as early. Like, if you're 18 and you're like, what are your financial goals for the future on your first date at Cafe Dimitri's eating a waffle? More power to you. Also, shout out to Cafe Dimitri's. Hopefully one day the sponsor of this show. If we're going to get into the last post, but if you're enjoying what you're hearing, and even if you're not enjoying what you're hearing, you did make it this far in the episode. Give us 1,000,000 stars. I'm done asking for 9, 6, 15 stars. I want 1,000,000 stars.
That's going to ruin the star economy,
John. No, no, no. It'll be all of ours. It'll be a windfall. Yeah, and then we can talk about it together.
Yes. There's never been a problem with two people having all of the money.
I want the situation where it's Mario Party 3 on N64, Nintendo 64, and you landed on Bowser. And I want you to click A to start, you know, that scrolly wheel where, you know, Bowser can take 20 coins, give you 10 coins, or you get the 999,999 star present, and I want you to click that. That's where we're at.
Have we alienated enough of our audience yet? We've localized us to the GTA crowd, the Greater Toronto Area crowd, and now we only the ones that like Mario Party and are down with billionaires who hoard money.
We're finding our niche.
That's a large demographic still, right?
Here, I'll alienate us further. We're finding our niche.
Oh gosh, our niche. All right, this last post comes from Constant Day 2679.
Great username.
Great year, probably in the future. Am I the asshole for causing my roommate to lose his job due to failing a drug test?
Yep.
I'm going to say no.
Hey, I see the word causing.
I'm gonna say no, because I feel like you'd have to really like try to do that in order to actually have caused it. I think something is going to be accidental in this one.
All right, let's see.
All right. My job does not drug test. I don't smoke, but I do add THC and CBD oil to my snacks so I can stay mellow all day. I'm not bombed, but I am impaired. I never use that term, bombed. I don't drive due to a neurological condition. The weed helps me cope. My roommate is well aware that I use THC in my food. I told him he was welcome to some snacks and warned him about the weed. He declined because his company does drug tests. Okay. I guess he spaced on one night after coming home drunk and ate some of my snacks. I reminded him the next day that my stuff has THC in it. He said it wasn't a problem as he had recently been randomly tested. Well, he hit the jackpot because about a week later, he was randomly tested again and he failed. To get his job back, he has to go to rehab, which he has to pay for. He is pissed at me, but I don't think I did anything wrong. I did not force it on him. I even reminded him the following day about the THC. He says it's my fault for even having it near him. He had passed the test before and it was near him. He didn't fail until he ate a bunch of my snacks. Now we are fighting and he may have to move out to afford rehab. Yes, I think it's ridiculous that he's blaming me. And I also think it's ridiculous that his company is forcing him to go to rehab for weed. Realistically, he is an alcoholic and that is more dangerous. Am I the asshole? Hachi machi. Okay, what do you think?
So I take back my gut reaction. We're learning today that gut reactions are stupid. You're allowed to have them, but that
I'm crushing it. I'm two for three.
That's pretty good. But yeah, ultimately, everyone has gut reactions. It's normal. It's human. But you have to put it aside, check your story, and ask questions. Be curious, especially when reading posts from constant underscore day underscore 2679.
I'm curious. Do you think why isn't this person the asshole?
They've been so clear and communicative that they have the snacks with THC. They have a neurological condition. You know, I've seen people who have epilepsy or other things using CBD THC oil to help you know, them feel better. There are 1,000 different reasons why that's a good thing for them. And they've communicated it. They said, hey, the snacks in the fridge have THC. I'm aware that you mentioned your company does drug testing. If you eat my snacks and you get tested, you will fail the test. He comes home. The roommate now comes home impaired. The roommate didn't say they're impaired, but it says in the story that they came home drunk and ate the snacks. Can't imagine what that night was like. If you know you're drunk, you're snacky and you're eating a bunch of, you know, edibles. That must have been a fun trip. And, you know, OP reminds him the next day that the stuff had THC in it. You know, maybe work from home for a week. Because THC does stay in your bloodstream for actually quite some time, right? It doesn't just go away like other things.
I believe for 9 weeks or something like that. Weeks or 9 months. Something wild like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's significant. So, you know, he has a roommate has a poor turn of luck and gets tested again, failed, and now might lose his job unless he goes to rehab, which I think, by the way, if we're talking about assholes here, that's a ludicrous company policy and not the good kind of ludicrous either. It's kind of like, hey, like in the case where somebody's actually struggling with addiction and then you're like, hey, you're going to lose your job and you now have to pay to go to rehab, make it all work. That's a lot. Like, I think that's unfair. So asshole company, but I don't think OP is an asshole. I think they did a really good job communicating like what they have in their home. I think, you know, for the future, it might be helpful to have, you know, all the blue containers of food have THC oil and then all the green ones have CBD and all the clear containers don't have drugs in them. I think that's something, you know, could work. But yeah, I don't think OP is an asshole. I think they did a really good job communicating. And also, don't eat your roommate's snacks. Like, get your own snacks. Yeah, that's how I feel.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think I agree with everything you said. I also want to take a step back because we don't really have this up here for obvious reasons. We don't have a drug testing for weed. That would be wild because cannabis is legal in Canada.
Good point.
We, I think we can't underestimate how much of an asshole move random drug testing is in the context of public health, because people use substances for many reasons other than recreation. I think this post is a good, you know, illustration of that. Like, you have neurological reasons that you're using cannabis. And while I don't necessarily agree with self-medication, I do understand that the implication of a drug test is, oh, if we find something on the drug test, not only are you some sort of addict, but we worry that you will be impaired on the job. And I don't think that's a fair assumption. In fact, one time I had an interview where they told me that they do drug tests for nicotine, for cigarettes.
Wow.
They need to make sure that you don't smoke cigarettes because you're a doctor, and that would be hypocritical, which I thought was pretty wild. But all this to say is that what has been normalized in this story, I guess I have problems with. But all of that aside, I think that your roommate is trying to blame you for their circumstances. But you're right. They've made decisions that didn't work out for them. And it's an asshole move to blame you. Could more have been done to prevent this from happening? Probably. I don't think that, like, you're faultless in the sense that you're keeping your snacks in the same container as another, but I don't think that makes you an asshole. I think that just means that the house could be more organized. That's not on you if they go scrounging around for snacks and they don't think better of it. Also, they said that they were fine with it the next day. It's only when they got caught that they had an issue with it. So I don't think you're an asshole. Frankly, I would probably sooner try to get a different job than go to rehab, because the money lost on going to rehab in this scenario for marijuana and or cannabis is just, it might be actually financially better for you to look for a different job. And for you, OP, maybe it's better for you to find a roommate who doesn't blame you for their mistakes. But that's up to you. In any case, I don't think you're an asshole.
Yeah, and also, if you know, this individual can use rehab, and then this is just not the mechanism to get it, depending what state or what country you're in, there might be different ways to go and access rehab. But yeah, it just seems like the company is kind of being a bit evil here. But yeah, I agree. Not the asshole. Company's the asshole. And label your snack containers and don't steal your roommate's snacks. Just don't do it. That makes you an asshole.
And I just want to say, as a disclaimer, anyone out there who's listening and is just like, yes, you totally can be addicted to cannabis and there should be rehabs, I'm not saying anything about that. I'm saying, in this particular scenario where the person had a snack, doesn't sound like they need rehabilitation. That's all I'm saying. If you've had bad experiences with cannabis dependency, that's completely legitimate. Don't read into that. I'm just saying that it doesn't sound like this scenario warrants any type of rehab.
Yeah. And be better, companies. Be better. Yeah. And
how your tune has changed, Mr. Millions of Stars, hoarding all the star economy. Now you want to be a man of the people.
Yeah.
I see how it is. I see, right. What happened here.
So if you want to be better, sure. I wanted to just throw that segue back in there because I thought it was a good one.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we've stopped talking about our segues, but I feel like we need to bring that back.
I've decided to start ruining your segues. I think that's a more efficient use of our time.
Probably. Yeah, so if you want to be better, bring the segue back. Subscribe. Listen to us more. We're on all streaming platforms, like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We're on all social media channels at Am I the Bleep. One of our Instagram videos actually just hit 2 million views, which I don't know why people like looking at me that much. It's kind of creepy, but endearing. Deeply endearing.
Should I ruin it and make one with me?
Yeah, do it, do it. Let's see what happens. Watch it like blow up and get like a billion views or something like that. People were just tired of this Jonathan. That was the problem. Yeah, let us know what you think.
We're on the cloud.
We're on the cloud.
But not the digital one. Look up in the sky, and if you see a cloud, there we are.
And if you see us, just always swipe right. That's all I'm saying. John, do you have some words of wisdom, some thoughts, some feelings, some emotions you want to leave our listeners off with today?
Sure. Our quote of this episode that we're going to leave you with to help you grow and learn and mature is, an asshole sitting in a tree is never afraid of the branch breaking because his trust is not in the branch, but in its own wings. Always believe in yourself.
Whoa, welcome to Am I the Bleep?